What's going on, everybody? Mark here with CCO's The Science of Fishing. We're here with Hannah from Pelican Harbor Seabird Station, a great conservation and nonprofit based out of Miami. We're going to talk about everything when it comes to doing conservation, all the birds that they rescue, all the marine life that they help, and all that they got going on over there.
You've landed on CCO's The Science of Fishing, where passion meets precision. Hold on tight as we dive in. But before we do, we would like to thank Sea Mule and Black Reef Co. for sponsoring this episode.
Thanks for coming, Hannah. I appreciate you.
Thank you. So excited to be here.
Absolutely. So, Seabird Station, you guys are based in Miami, right?
Yes, we're over on 79th Street.
Okay. Can you tell us a little bit about the work you guys do?
Yes, so we are a wildlife rehabilitation center, so we rescue all native, sick, injured, or orphaned wildlife throughout all of Miami-Dade.
Okay, very cool. So you guys are called Seabird Station, though, so but it's not just birds, right?
Exactly, yeah. So we're called Pelican Harbor originally. We were actually founded in 1980, and our founders, Harry and Darlene Kelton, started just with pelicans for really the first two decades. It was purely pelicans, maybe one or two other species thrown in there. But now we treat all native wildlife, essentially all native wildlife. So squirrels, opossums, pelicans, owls, you name it, if it's native to Florida, we most likely have treated it.
That's pretty cool. Do you guys have any really cool species right now that you're working with or...
So being in Miami especially is interesting because it's so biodiverse, especially with the migration paths.
Right.
So right now we have a couple of peregrine falcons in care.
Falcons?
Falcons, yeah. So they're migrating right now as well, and they tend to get caught in high-rise balconies because they'll be kind of like chasing birds, slam into a window of one of the one of the high-rises in Brickell, and then once they kind of get stunned and fall down into the balcony, they can't find their way out. So every single year, we get like at least five or six peregrine falcons from downtown Brickell that we have to go up and rescue them from the balconies. Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
That's nuts. And those are those the birds that we see way up high and they come down? Or
those are going to be vultures most of the time.
I got you.
But you could see peregrines. Yeah, they're very fast, though.
Okay.
And they're not here for a super long time. They're kind of migrate through.
Those aren't the ones that people typically use like for falconry, for like hunting, or is it?
I'm not entirely sure. It's usually hawks, though. I don't think peregrines.
Okay.
Yeah, it's usually like red-tailed hawks.
I gotcha. Okay. So you guys have those. That's pretty cool. Anything else like marine science life-wise that you guys have right now? I saw you guys were working. You guys had a turtle that had a tortoise, rather, right? You guys were repairing its shell.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So we have tons of different seabirds.
Okay.
We have a baby owl in care right now.
Wow.
We have really anything under
the
sun. But we don't do any like marine mammals. So unfortunately, no manatees, which would be amazing. But yeah, every year we treat around 150 different species. And in our history, we've treated 215 distinct species.
Wow. What's like, so how many like patients? Or I don't know what to call
it. Yeah, no, they're
patients,
definitely
right?
patients. Yeah.
How many do you guys do a year?
So like... a year, it's around 2,000 patients.
Wow.
And we're just approaching treating our 42nd 1,000th patient.
Wow.
Yeah.
Since
I think
like inception?
Since inception, yeah. We're at like 41,900 and something.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's an average of a new patient every, I think it evens out to like an hour and a half.
Okay.
Throughout like an 8-hour day.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is there a certain specific species you enjoy the most or you think is the cutest or?
I'm kind of partial to owls.
Okay.
I love barn owls,
yeah.
screech owls, but of course you love all of them.
Right. You got to love them all.
Yeah.
So you guys really are, you know, doing the work of God, right? You're taking care of our wildlife. You're making sure everything is being sustained. Would you say that like the trend that you've seen is that things are getting worse or better in terms of conservation and making sure that our environment and, you know, the wildlife and everything's taken care of?
I think kind of both. So
okay.
I think people have become more aware. They're educating themselves. There are more conservation initiatives than there used to be. That being said, we're still growing as a human population very rapidly. So definitely I would say there's been an increased number of like human wildlife interactions, particularly in areas like Miami that are becoming so industrialized and urbanized so quickly.
Right.
Kind of that like urban sprawl.
Yeah.
Of whether it's getting hit by cars, slamming into the windows, people's, you know, feral cats, cat attacks. and of course fishing line with all the commercial and recreational fishing down here. So we have seen a trend every year of more patients, and that maybe just more animals being injured. It may be just more people knowing about us or people willing to help. But there has definitely been an upwards trend as far as the number of animals that we're treating every year.
Okay. So you mentioned the fish and lion thing. What do you typically see? Is it birds that are caught up or turtles, or what do you typically treat when it comes to that stuff? Fishing related industry, injuries rather.
Yeah. So, the large majority of the pelicans that come in, the large amount of pelicans that come in, it might not be the cause of injury, but it's kind of like a secondary thing. So almost all of them have some sort of ingested fishing hook and or line or something external, even those tiny little hooks. I'm not sure what they're called. you can add that in. So we're seeing a bunch of pelicans, the gulls, of course, too. Different, there's laughing gulls or herring gulls, turtles you mentioned as well. Lots of times we'll see them, with the hooks in their mouths.
Really?
So it's very, very common. Yeah.
That's sad. I feel like people aren't taking care of their stuff. Do you think it's like just people throwing line in the water and just like throwing their excess, or is it like people hooking them and just like, screw it, cut it?
I think it's both. Yeah. I think, a lot of it is just accidental catches, and they're like, oh, that's all be fine, it'll, you know, I'll just cut it. And that's what we always plead people to not cut the line, because one, now that animal's out there with a hook in it, and the line, it's obviously entangles, it cuts off their circulation, it can wrap around their throat or their you know, extremities. So I think a lot of it is just kind of improperly disposed of gear, but also a lot of times you'll get a fish that might get away, now has a hook in its mouth, pelican's gonna go eat that fish.
Yeah.
And then, you know.
Okay, that makes sense. But that one we can't help out. What's like the craziest, you know, first let's talk about fishing related injury that you've seen. What is the, like, I don't want to say gruesome, but like, what have you seen that's really like startled you? If startled
there,
is the right
yeah,
word.
No, I mean, it's not a happy ending one, but there was this laughing gull that came in, and it had line completely entangled around its shoulder, and it's incredible, like the resilience of wildlife. So this bird came in, and its entire, I don't know how long it had been, but weeks if not months, its entire wing was like basically just like feathers and bone. There was no skin, it was completely just like, it was just hanging on by a thread, if you will. And obviously, you know, that bird couldn't survive and had to be, you know, humanely euthanized. But it was still out there and kind of, you know, wandering around picking up scraps with this massive ball of line around its wing and just its wing, like, just dangling at its side.
So what do you think people should do? Like, you know, what, throw out your line? And, like, what would you say is, like, the number one thing that you would want a fisherman to do in terms of when they're out there and making sure that they're doing the right thing?
So disposing of your own gear properly, of course, but if you take just 5 seconds to look around and see, maybe there's other discarded gear, maybe there's something caught in a tree that you can kind of go and cut down really quickly.
Right.
And almost all marinas should have those receptacles, the kind of, you know, like the PVC tube, to recycle there, and just be more cognizant as well of your surroundings as you're fishing.
Yep.
Don't cast near a giant mangrove, you know, don't, so just be aware of your surroundings and kind of the, like any opportunities for entanglement or getting caught up.
I gotcha. So you guys do a lot of work with these animals, and I'm sure a lot of the people that are listening want to get involved. Do you guys have a volunteer program or anything for people to kind of be able to come out there and do the good work that you guys are doing as well?
Absolutely. Yes. We could not survive without volunteers.
Okay.
We have an amazing group of volunteers, a couple different opportunities too. You can obviously come and help actually with the animals. You can't touch them or pet them or anything. They are wild. But helping to clean the enclosures outside, prep their diets, which is interesting and fun.
Okay.
And just be kind of on site like that. If you want to be a little more removed but still helping, we also train volunteers to go out and help contain and transport injured animals. Wow. So that's something that you don't necessarily need a weekly time commitment for. But like I said, we treat animals from all over Miami-Dade, and we're up kind of near North Miami. If yep. something's down in Kendall, it's going to take a long time for us to get down there if we even can. So right. having these volunteers allows us to cut down on the patient transport time and have a higher success rate for those animals.
That makes sense. Is it primarily the vets that are doing the interaction and touching the animals and making sure that they're taken care of? And
yeah, so we have two part-time veterinarians, and then okay. the rest of our clinic staff are certified wildlife rehabilitators.
Yeah.
And so that's who's going to be actually doing like the hands-on treatments and x-rays and feedings and things like that.
It must be different, you know, working on a bird rather than like a cat or a dog, right? So
yeah, wildlife medicine is it's like a whole totally different beast. Yeah. There's all these different rules. There's different medications. Different animals respond differently to different treatments. So it's been very interesting to kind of learn all of that and watch the profession as a whole kind of evolve too. It's very
right.
It's very unique. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen some of the stuff that you guys do on Instagram, and it's like the surgeries that you guys do is like, it's just, do you guys put any of the birds like under anesthesia or any of the animals?
And oh yeah. Probably you have to, right? Daily. Yeah. We're a full service wildlife hospital. So yeah. we're like an emergency room for wildlife.
Right.
So we do surgeries, x-rays, anesthesia. We have a full like in-house lab machine that you can do wow. blood work on. Yeah, the whole shebang.
And the vets are primarily reading all the results and interpreting and then making the decisions for the animals, right?
Or so the veterinarians are obviously on staff to do the surgeries, things yeah. that we're not licensed to do. But the rehabilitators really do the large majority of the work. We are all trained how to read those results, how to take the blood. There's really just specific treatments that we're not able to do anything kind of involving, you yeah. know, like a stitch or a scalpel.
Right.
But everything else under the sun, it's the rehabbers. They're real okay. miracle workers in yeah. there.
Are you a rehabber yourself or?
So retired, I guess. Okay. I was in the clinic for around 4 years here.
Very yeah. cool.
And now I'm kind of on the other side of the wall, doing communications and marketing. Yeah.
Well, that kind of leads me to my next question. How did you get involved with this, you know, this nonprofit, and what inspires you like every day to do this, you know?
Yeah. So I'm originally from New Jersey. Mm-hmm. So I actually moved to Miami for Pelican Harbor.
Really?
I just was lucky that my college, I went to the University of Delaware. I was lucky that they had this very weird niche major that kind of piqued my interest. So I ended up graduating with a degree in wildlife conservation and ecology.
Very cool.
And I thankfully have a job in that field, given the very kind of niche, you know, subject yeah. matter. But I discovered wildlife rehab through an internship up in New Jersey. And upon graduation, I was like, this is the only thing I found that has really kind of like set my heart on fire, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, got the job down here, moved down, and it's just so rewarding, you know, yeah. like being able to do something and see the actual direct impact every single day, know that you are working for the overall good of the earth. If you know, it's like a little cheesy, but it's amazing.
No, but it's awesome. I mean, yeah. you probably see like, it's probably incredible to see a bird or an animal come back from whatever state they came into you as and then fly away or swim away.
It's
or,
incredible. Yeah. Right. There's like, nothing like it.
In front of me, I have the Flushmaster by Seemule. This little device simplifies the process for flushing your engines. All it takes is 3 easy steps. Plug the hose into the device, plug the hoses from the device into your motors, and press on. That's all it takes to preserve the longevity of your motors, ensuring 100% clean water is running through them. So if you want to preserve your motors, go to Seemule.com and go pick up a Flushmaster. What is the most, like, is there, like, a patient that you've connected with the most? You know, is there, like, an animal that, like...
Oh, God, there's so many. Let's yeah. think. Yeah, I mean, we've had patients. Usually the average time in care is around a month, but yeah. we've had patients with us for like 6 or 7 months before.
Really?
So I would say probably, yeah, like there was a hawk actually that was shot. That's a big cause of injury too, is a lot of people in Miami might keep chickens or pigeons, and they don't like the hawks that eat them, so they'll actually shoot them.
Really?
Which is not only immoral, but incredibly illegal as yeah. well. so we got this hawk that had been shot in the shoulder and really just like destroyed its wing. and multiple pinning surgeries. So we had to like put like rods in the wing.
You can do that in a bird?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. So it's actually easier, I guess, in birds than in people because birds have hollow bones.
Okay.
So you're able to just kind of like place the pin directly through the center of the bone, and then it comes out both sides,
yeah.
Obviously very well wrapped and stabilized. But that bird was in care for around 6 months. Tons of physical therapy because it took a long time for that bone to finally remodel.
Yeah.
And you can't release an animal into the wild with at 90%. You know,
right.
If your dog is a little limp for the rest of its life, it's like, okay, you know, it's fine.
Yeah.
But you can't not be at 100% or you're not going to survive in the wild.
Right.
So we had to make sure that that bird was tip-top shape and took a really long time. But seeing him fly free after that was...
Did he have a name?
Incredible. No, so it's superstitious to name them. They all have patient numbers. Sometimes, like...
You guys have a resident pelican, though, no?
True. So we do.
I saw that.
We do have some ambassadors, permanent ambassadors, with us, whose injuries deem them unreleasable for the wild, but their demeanor and their species kind of allows them to live with us full time for education and to be ambassadors of their species. So we do have a couple named ambassadors, but we don't name any of our patients.
I gotcha. So who are the ambassadors? You guys have a pelican, right?
Yes, we actually have 5 permanent pelicans.
Oh, wow.
Most of them are grandfathered in at this point, too. So they're all around like 20 years old. They can live to be like up to 40 in captivity. So we have Pepe. We have Monroe. We have Aggie. We have Felix. And one more. I'm forgetting.
Okay.
I'm blanking. But we also have an opossum, which are near and dear to my heart.
Yeah.
If anybody dislikes opossums, they can come and see me at 1279 Northeast 79th Street Causeway, and I will change their minds.
Yeah.
So we have an opossum named Maggie, and we have 2 owls named Luna and Mowgli.
That's awesome. I got to come by and check them out.
Yes. We're open every single day, even
awesome.
Christmas. Yeah.
So what's the affinity with opossums, right? It's not opossums. People just call them possums,
it
right?
It is opossum.
It's opossum.
Virginia opossum. They are not scary. They're not dirty. They do not have rabies. That's like the biggest falsity.
Yeah.
They do not carry rabies. They are not related to rats at all. They're not going to attack your dog or your small children. They're actually fairly gentle. They just kind of put on a big show. If they're intimidated, they'll open their mouth and hiss and stuff. But they're great for the environment. They eat ticks. They can eat up to like 5,000 ticks in a season.
Wow.
So they're really great up north, especially areas that are like prone to Lyme disease. They eat everything that you don't want in your yard, cockroaches, your rotting mangoes,
really?
Anything like that. So they're scavengers. So they're just like nature's cleanup crew.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And of course, if you have Maggie, who's lived with us and she was like this big, you have a connection. She's very sweet.
Yeah, that's awesome. So were you always into wildlife growing up, or was this a thing that developed in college? Or
I was always like an outside, like running in the woods. And I remember like the first time I encountered injured wildlife, I definitely did the wrong thing, hindsight. But I found like this tiny little baby bird that had fallen from its nest, a robin, and it was like not even a day old. I brought it home. It's like, oh my God, mom, like made this little makeshift nest. And I had the like heating pad and everything. And I probably sat there in my garage just like staring at it for hours and hours, and then it died.
So what are you supposed to do in that situation?
Always bring it to a certified wildlife rehabilitation center.
Okay.
They're everywhere across the U.S. Even in here in Miami, we have probably 3 within an hour ride. Pelican Harbor is in Miami. There's another in Fort Lauderdale. There's one down in Homestead. As amazing as it is to try to treat these animals for yourself. Like I, for example, had no idea what I was doing. It was not warm enough. It was not being fed the right things. I was trying to feed it egg because I Googled it. Every single one of these animals has incredibly specialized needs and diets, even just the way that they're fed. So it's always the best bet to bring it to a rehabber and let...
That makes sense. I mean, I wouldn't know what to do with
it
if I saw an animal like that. And, you know, I feel like a lot of the times while we're fishing, we get these injured birds that just come land on the boat and just hang out with us.
Mm-hmm.
Like last week I was out sword fishing, and I what are those birds that are like black and yellow? It looks like a little finch. It's like this big. They fly by. I guess they're migrating through right now.
I was just about to say, yeah, it would be some sort of migratory warbler. Yeah. So, and that's what's so kind of important about Miami too, is we're this last final stopover point before they head down to like South America or Central America. So he was probably just tired and out in the middle of the water. He's like, oh man, I can take a break.
Yeah. We started feeding him water. He just hung out with us. He was just tired.
Yeah.
It was crazy. It was hours of him. And usually they come around 5 minutes and then fly
and then
away.
Go off.
Yeah. This guy just hung out with us. It was cool.
Take a little break.
Yeah,
that is cool.
Exactly.
That's really cool.
So can you kind of explain what the migratory, you know, what they're doing in terms of migration, just for people that don't understand why the birds are moving through at certain times of the year?
And So there's spring and fall migration. So right now we're through fall migration. So the birds are moving south to prepare for the winter, the cold weather. Nobody wants to be cold.
Yeah.
That's why we live in Miami.
Right.
And so a large majority of the birds kind of coming through don't live here year round. They might stop over for a month. They might stop over for a day.
Wow.
So a lot of these warblers, they're stopping over here, but their final destination might be, you know, Central America or South America.
So they're moving thousands of miles, hundreds, thousands of miles.
Yes. It's incredible. And these tiny little birds, like they're, you know, by the time they arrive, they've expended like half of their body weight basically in just flying.
But they survive, right? Mm-hmm. They forage and eat.
And that's the thing too. It's if we're kind of bulldozing everything here in Miami, there's nothing for these birds to eat or they're eating the wrong thing. So
you think the industrialization down here is becoming a problem for wildlife?
Totally. Yeah.
For people that don't understand, how does the, you know, I guess the bird migration or, you know, how do they contribute to the ecological system of the ocean? Because people, I feel like as fishermen, we look at birds as, hey, there's a bird right there. There's a flock of birds. That means there's fish there.
Mm-hmm.
That's really the only thing a lot of these guys think about when they're out on the water. Mm-hmm. But in terms of making sure that these birds are taken care of, how else do you see them playing a role in our, you know, ecology and everything that goes on in the ocean and in the lakes and everything that's around here?
Yeah, I mean, everything is so interconnected. You know, like if you really take a step back, it's one tiny little change has this ripple effect. And birds especially, like seabirds especially, are a great like indicator of the overall health of an ecosystem.
How so?
So if you don't have good water quality and you don't have good fish, you don't have, you know, the right ocean temperatures, the birds are not going to be thriving in that area. So if you have a thriving wildlife population, it's a good indicator that you have a very healthy ecosystem. And we as humans also, you know, all share the same ecosystem as well. So it's kind of just to their like intrinsic value, you know, they deserve to be here. They deserve to be able to survive in our world and thrive as much as we do.
Right.
So
it's kind of their land, their ocean.
Exactly. Yeah. We're intruding on them basically. Yeah.
So the more birds you see around, it means the better the wildlife and everything that's doing it. It's better for fishing. Our oceans are better. That means, okay.
So
that's an awesome sign. That's great to hear.
I mean,
that's pretty sweet. I mean, I think right now we're not seeing as many because of the migration though, right? Because they're moving through or they're coming in spurts or...
It's a little different, I think, with like the seabirds, especially in Miami. There's always gulls. Pelicans do migrate through as well.
Yeah.
But especially if you're kind of out like deeper into the ocean, you're starting to get the pelagic birds. And they're the ones that just stay out on the ocean. They don't really roost on land. You have your boobies and your albatross, gannets and things like that, which are also great indicators as well.
Are there any species that you've seen, whether pelagic or not, that have kind of dwindled in numbers over time with the industrialization of Miami and of South Florida?
So pelicans, I would say, especially here in Miami, are decreasing. And that's because they used to breed prolifically in Biscayne Bay. And of course, I think everybody knows now about the health of the bay or lack thereof. So pelicans aren't really breeding here anymore. So their population has definitely been dwindling.
Yeah.
But just as a whole as well, like wood storks are kind of being pushed further into the Everglades. There used to be flamingos here years and years and years ago.
Really?
Yeah, the flamingos are actually native to Florida. They were here in like the 1800s and then quickly got hunted for their feathers. Kind of like locally extinct. They were overhunted for their feathers, and then same thing as industrialization began. Just the habitat became less and less, and now they're just kind of over in the Yucatan or Central America.
Really? So we don't have any in Florida anymore, or very few.
A sprinkling, you could say. Yeah, but not anywhere near the population of what it used to be.
Wow. So what can we do as, you know, a lot of the guys that are listening to this and a lot of the gals that listen to this are fishermen and fisherwomen. What can we do for on our part to make sure that the habitat of the pelicans is, you know, conserved? All these different animals that are losing their homes. What can we do as fishermen and women to make sure that we keep that in place so we're able to have a thriving wildlife?
Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously there is the kind of rules in place for fishing as far as the size or the age. So just being aware of that and actually listening to that to allow the oceans to continue to be prolific and full of fish so that our wildlife, you know, can also survive there.
Right.
But another big, big thing that maybe segue, but we didn't touch on is feeding wildlife.
Okay.
And feeding scraps or carcasses or fillets.
Bad idea.
Like the worst idea, if you're trying to help a bird, that's like the absolute worst thing that you could do for them is try to
feed them. How
come? So pelicans especially, the fish they eat are not very big. It's like probably smaller than
like
your
little
hand.
Pilchards and stuff like that.
So a lot of times we'll get pelicans in with these massive like just fish carcasses in their throat. The fishermen were like, here's a snack. Look, they look so hungry here. And so pelicans are going to eat their fish head first. And then obviously they have those really sharp vertebrae, all of the spines.
Yeah.
So it's either going to get caught in the pelican's throat because he can't swallow it. So he's going to try to regurgitate it. Now all of those spines are just going to like totally, they shred the pouch. And that's obviously catastrophic. Or if he can't get it out of his throat, he's going to starve and die.
Really?
So, yeah, you need to not ever, ever, ever feed wildlife.
Have you guys ever taken a big carcass out of a pelican's throat? Really?
Like, huge. I'm not a fisherwoman, so I don't know what it was, but it was too big.
How often do you see that? Like,
unfortunately, I think it happens more often than we know of because
They end up dying, or they
fly off. Yeah. But we see it at least a couple times a year.
Wow.
And even if it is not a giant carcass, feeding them little scraps, feeding them, you know, even like your bait fish,
right?
That is going to keep them around, right? Like we want to reduce human wildlife interaction as much as possible, keep them wild. So as soon as a pelican, especially if it's a young bird, realizes this place is great. Oh my God, all these guys are feeding me. Like I don't have to do anything. Right. So they're going to hang around. They're going to hang around where all the fishing gear is, all the line, all that, you know. So
they know.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's if you're trying to reduce your impact, basically calling them towards you is not the answer.
Right.
And they know what they're doing. They know how to fish. They know how to eat. I know you think, you know, it might be nice to give them a snack, but they're wild animals and they're totally fine. And if anything, you're just putting them in harm's way by feeding them.
Right. That kind of leads me into my next question. I know you guys don't work with manatees a lot, but this is a question that I have. Is giving them the hose like a bad thing? Don't like people feed the manatees the hose, right?
So manatees love fresh water.
Yeah.
I don't want to speak to that because I don't honestly know, but I would assume not great because then again, it's either next to a boat or it's next to a dock, so it's attracting them towards a man-made structure.
Right.
I don't think giving them fresh water is bad,
okay,
but the overarching, the fact that the fresh water is next to a marina or a dock or something, that what I would imagine is not
Do you know
great.
Why they love fresh water? Or?
I don't.
Interesting.
I don't. I'll have to Google it.
Yeah, I'll look into that too. That's awesome. Well, I appreciate you coming by. Thank you for educating me, educating everybody at home. And, you know, everybody, you guys got to do your part. Make sure you don't feed the wildlife. Make sure you guys go check out Pelican Harbor Seabird Station. Help them out. Volunteer. And make sure you guys are doing the right thing on the water when you're fishing. Have a good one, everybody.
Thanks for joining us on CCO's The Science of Fishing. We hope that this episode was helpful and you learned something for the next time you're wetting a line. Before we cast off, a special thanks to our sponsors, Sea Mule and Black Reef Co. Stay hooked by following us on social media at Science of Fishing and hitting the subscribe button. And if you know someone who'd enjoy this, don't hesitate to share. Until we meet again, catch 'em up.